Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. Well, another great show with some great guests. Of course, Eamon Dunphy as entertaining as always, talking about the Premiership being back, about the great introductions, Haaland for Man City, Nunes for Liverpool, and of course, all the controversy around Manchester United and Ten Hag's opening game against Brighton. It's going to be more pain for United fans, unfortunately. But have a listen. Also have a listen to Philip Quinn, the Daily Mail correspondent for golf. Interesting chat with him about Leona Maguire, about the PGA Tour, and of course all the controversy around LIV Golf as well. Some great stuff in there from him. Have a listen, enjoy, and we'll see you next week. The great Eamon Dunphy, he joins us on the line now. A very good morning to you, Eamon.
Good morning, Janice. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited, although after last week's result for Manchester United, it wasn't the best possible start. But yeah, looking forward to today. Brentford away. It's going to be another tough one, though. Where do you see it going?
Well, every game for United will be difficult now, Ken. Yeah. And Brentford, they'll come out all guns blazing. There's a lot of energy in that team. Mm. At set pieces, they're well organised, have a good coach. So it won't be easy for United. Brentford obviously need the points badly, as badly as Manchester United. So I see it as being a very difficult game.
Yeah.
United, they're in a bad place.
They are, aren't they? I mean, honestly, even as a Manchester United fan, they've become almost, over these last couple of months, it's become almost like a laughing stock of the Premiership. The way they've fallen so sort of ungracefully, as I should say.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great club, one of the great clubs in the world, not just in England. Mm. And of course, it would enrich football, particularly English football, if Manchester United had a great team and were doing, you know, threatening at and playing the kind of football they can play. When you look at the big picture like that, it's sad to see it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, when you're a great club, you attract people who hate you as well.
Yeah.
And Liverpool fans and others will be sort of laughing. Manchester City, I'd say in Manchester, the city side of the city, as it were, won't be crying. But they're doomed, Ken.
Look, Liverpool, you know, they hadn't won anything for such a long time, but they were a great team in the A. Is this just a sort of one of those phases that the club is going through, or do you think it's going to be like this for quite a while until maybe there's a change at the helm, like, and the owners are gone or they're bought out or whatever?
Well, I don't think the game has changed so much since the years when Liverpool, say, went 30 years without winning the Premier League, but the game is changing so much now.
Yeah.
Players have so much power. Their owners really. I mean, if you look at the owners of Manchester United, they won't give this new manager Ten Hag the money to buy players. So he's looking at. He was trying to sign Marco Arnautovic. This week, that makes the club a laughing stock. He's trying to sign Rabiot, who's just a waster. He's been everywhere. Juventus, PSG, of course, he started, but he's a waster. Now, players don't want to go there.
Yeah.
This fella De Jong from Barcelona, he wants to go to Chelsea. He doesn't want anything to do with Manchester United. Mm. They haven't got the players at the moment. In the past, United have two great managers, Matt Busby and Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
It took both of them, actually, 3 years, maybe a little bit longer, to really get the team they wanted and to win a trophy, big trophy.
Yeah.
And
is that how long you think it's going to take Ten Hag, or even longer?
I don't think he's got any chance from right now.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who wants to sign Arnautovic shouldn't be managing Manchester United. I mean, it's not even funny. I mean, he was at West Ham.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And
then he went to China.
Well, every time he scored a goal, he went off to the corner and celebrated on his own. The players hated him. He's a very selfish kind of loose cannon, really. I don't think this guy's got any chance. It appears, just in the most recent news, or in the past 2 or 3 weeks, that the Glazers won't give him the money to buy the players he wants. At the same time, there's trouble with Ronaldo. You know, he seems indecisive about that. He doesn't know what to do. I mean, will Ronaldo play today? You're a United
fan. I think he will play, yeah, because I thought they were a little bit different a team when he did come on, and they still didn't do much against Brighton. But I think he will start him today for sure. I mean, some of the players that they have, I mean, there's Sancho, Rashford, you know, Fernandes, you know, Ronaldo. And they have some young players as well. They seem to have some decent, some really good players, but they're just not playing together. What is the problem?
The problem is that the players aren't good enough, Ken. I mean, midfield, McTominay and Fred. Keane lashed them, actually, Roy Keane, on television last week. Now, I like McTominay. I think he's a good, hard-working player. Fred has had his moments as well, but they're a million miles away from the top players.
Yeah.
They don't have a striker, really. Ronaldo can't press. So how does Ten Hag get him into his team if he can't play the game the way Ten Hag wants the game to be played? If you look elsewhere, Marcus Rashford has had a bad 18 months, really. He's a terrific lad. He's done a lot of work outside of football for, you know, about school dinners and stuff like that. But he's a footballer first and foremost.
Yeah.
Martial, Sancho and Rashford were never going to work as a front three. Martial got injured, but he's no good, and he's been there a long time. They don't have the players. I mean, really, that's where you start. Then the next problem is, how do I get the players? Well, the two things you need: A, an owner who's willing to sign the check, and B, that players of real substance want to go to Manchester. And if De Jong doesn't want to go and live in Manchester and be in that sort of club, which is becoming a laughingstock, well then what does the coach do? And what does Ten Hag do? And they made a mistake perhaps after Ferguson retired, but they didn't give David Moyes the a year
time.
Even.
Yeah, 10 months.
Now, if Ferguson and Busby had been treated like that, they would never have built the great club they built.
And
in Ferguson's case, rebuilt it. Nobody enjoys it. I mean, even people who don't, you know, who are just...
Well, a lot of Scouse fans will enjoy it at the moment.
Well,
I mean,
the Brentford fans might enjoy it tonight. But the other thing is the signings they have made. I mean, they went Banco on Harry Maguire, for example.
Yeah.
And he costs more than Virgil van Dijk at the time. To be honest, I thought Maguire was a good signing. He hasn't proved to be a good signing, and he's had a really bad year, but he does well for England. I think Shaw's a very good player. The goalkeeper, De Gea, is outstanding. But the standard of the game in England now is so high. Look at Spurs. It's a good example. They could have had Conte.
Yeah.
He expressed the desire to go
really
there.
Good manager.
And they issued a statement saying they didn't think his kind of football suited Manchester United. I mean, what can you do about that?
Yeah.
This is a man who's won everything. Everywhere he's been, including for Italy, you know. And they rejected him effectively. And they did it publicly. Look what he's doing at Spurs. That's what you need.
He's brought some good players in.
Eamon, good morning to you. It's Declan here.
Hi, Declan.
Good, thanks, Eamon. Just to move it to the other side of Manchester, the Manchester City, someone who wanted to move to Manchester and has done is your man Haaland, of course. Hit the ground running against West Ham last week. What were your overall impressions of the champions in their opening game last week, Eamon?
I thought they were very good. I thought they were devastating. I'm a Liverpool fan, and I'd always be, you know, hoping, but this fella is, Haaland is, he's off the charts good. He's got everything: pace, awareness, he's tough, He's 22. He's only going to get better in that team. I don't see maybe... I don't want to give hostages to fortune, but I find it hard to see anybody beating City this year.
Yeah,
I mean, they looked awesome. And West Ham are no soft touch these days, but Haaland is just...
He's powerful as well, isn't he, Eamon? He's very strong and pose and character.
Oh,
very
yeah.
Strong.
He's very much, him and Mbappe are the two best young players in the world. And unless something unforeseen and terrible happens... Haaland should have a fantastic career. He'll get a lot of goals playing for Manchester City, and they look very, very exciting. And the big thing they've got to do is win the Champions League, which Pep hasn't done there. Yeah. But I thought they were, for just to answer Declan, I think they are going to be very hard to beat once. by anybody, if they stay fit.
I think that's the key, isn't it? If he stays fit and injury free, that, you know, without doubt, he's going to be thereabouts with a golden boot as well, Haaland.
Oh yeah, I mean he seems to have his head screwed on. His father, of course, was a top player. Mm. He'd get good advice. They won't make any mistakes. He stayed at Dortmund for an extra season.
Yeah,
he didn't rush to move. He appears to be a very intelligent, sensible, and ambitious and hardworking young guy. I saw him interviewed after the match last week. He wasn't carried away. Mm-hmm. But the two goals, one was a penalty, but the other goal was very impressive.
I don't think he was ever going to come to Manchester United, was he, after the Roy Keane incident with his father?
No. No, but our players want to go to clubs where the other great players are. They want to go to a club, player like him, where they're going to be playing Champions League football and they're going to be winning the Champions League. They want to play for great coaches.
Yeah.
And that's what they want. And these days, players are the ones who make the big decisions for themselves. If you want to focus on United, you'd have to focus on the owners. You'd have to look at their record. And even with this new coach, Ten Hag, they won't give him the money. It's clear you can't get the money. If you want Arnautovic, well then, you're dead.
You would wonder, Eamon, if Micah Richards has a death wish, wouldn't you? Bringing the Haaland incidents up with Roy Keane. But anyway, Liverpool, brilliant start by any means against Fulham away Saturday. What did you make of their performance on the day?
Well, I thought Fulham were very good.
They were.
I thought they played really well. I was disappointed with the way Liverpool defended. Trent Alexander, he's a brilliant footballer going forward, but he's still defensively badly at fault for the first Mitrovic goal. And the penalty, well, it was a penalty. There was a little bit of complacency on the part of Van Dijk. Liverpool picked up a bad injury, Thiago out for maybe 4-6 weeks. I didn't think it was a great start. They may have been a bit complacent as it was only Fulham.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be very happy now until they get some points on the board.
You must have been happy with the forward, though. He looked pretty good, didn't he?
He looked very impressive. He's a top player.
Yeah,
they've done well. Mm. Generally, their signings have been good. He's a top player. He's scored a lot of goals. Just every team they play will target Trent. And yes, he gives so many assists. He's deadly going forward. He's a wonderful footballer to watch. But he has to learn to defend, and he doesn't appear to be learning.
He's a great deliverer of a ball, isn't he? Great passer of a ball.
He's a fantastic footballer. But he's a fullback, and the first thing fullbacks have to do is defend. And if you're playing the big teams, they know exactly where your weakness is, and they will target that weakness. And it was disappointing to give a goal away from what. Essentially, it was a harmless cross.
Yeah.
He was badly positioned. Mitrovic got the better of him, and Yeah. It's a terrible goal.
It's a bad couple of points as well to give away. Eamon, we've only got about 30 seconds left. Any hope for United away to Brentford today, please?
There's always hope, Ken.
Eternal hope. Eternal hope.
There's always hope.
Okay. And the podcast gone well?
Yeah, it's gone very well, Ken.
Great
thanks
stuff.
Very much.
Okay.
And it's great. Thanks for all your help.
Not a Paul. Not at all. It's great. It's great. Great to talk to you. Great to have you on.
Okay.
Best of luck with the podcast, and look forward to speaking to you over the next couple of weeks for
the
Premiership.
Anytime you want.
Okay. Thanks, Eamon.
Okay. See you.
Okay. Bottle of red wine on the way. Now we turn our attention to soccer, and of course the Electricity Premier Division, and indeed all Irish football, as well as what's coming up the weekend in the Premiership as well. And delighted to be welcoming, of course, Alan Cawley from Cawley's Call. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Yeah, good to hear you. Good to chat. It's been a while.
It's been too long, Ken.
Hey, we missed the old times of the old Pembroke on the Wednesday afternoon. You used to skip off from work, and we'd have a little hour down there playing, kicking around football. Showing your silky skills.
Those were the days, Ken. You were the one with the silky skills, but not me.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk about Rovers, because they showed some silky skills in the Europa League. It's great to see them get through, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, Ken. It's been a great couple of weeks for them. And I think out of all the teams, it's been a good couple of weeks for some other teams as well, but I think out of all of them, they were the ones with the most realistic chance of maybe hitting the group stage because of the pathway now through the Champions League route. And then if you lose in that, you drop down to the Europa League, and then you still have an opportunity with the Europa Conference League as well. So they've fully availed of that, and they've done their stuff. They've played the games, and they've done ever so well in the games, Ken. And I suppose the result during the week was absolutely brilliant.
Fantastic.
Off the back of the good win here last week as well, which gave them the cushion, the 3-1 win. So they've set themselves up lovely for a game next week now, with an opportunity of still hitting the Europa League group stage, which will be an amazing achievement.
Yeah.
But they're guaranteed, obviously, the Europa Conference League win. Yeah.
And, of course, guaranteed a nice big check as well.
Massive. And that's, I suppose, the big thing now, Ken. Like, we all have debates about Irish football and the structures and the prize money on offer here in the league. And it's a paltry sum, let's be honest about it, for the amount of games that you play. But for teams qualifying through, especially the group stages in Europe, but even just getting through around, it's up like 250 grand for the likes of Sligo Rovers, St. Pat's. Huge money they've earned as well. But for St. Pat's now getting to a group stage, you're in the millions, which is amazing for them.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and of course, just one thing, Al. First of all, good morning to you. They have come back domestically after European games. They drew 1-1 with Drogheda United at Tallaght Stadium. And they had a good result. I think it was a good result anyway, against Derry City last night, 0-0 away from home at the Brandywell. Derry missing a penalty, so the gap is down to 4. But we have what everyone hoped we would have now, is a genuine title race. And the fact that Rovers will have so many European commitments over the next couple of months is going to make it more interesting.
Absolutely, Declan. And I think if you look back 3 or 4 weeks ago, or even before the European stuff started, we all thought Shamrock Rovers were going to just stroll to the league title. But even though it's been a brilliant few weeks for them, and it has, and Stephen Bradley will tell you, even though now the title race is down to 3 or 4 points, he'll still tell you it's been amazing, and that's where they want to be, is obviously group stages. But it's given everyone else the chance for the league title, and especially, as you said, Derry and Dundalk. I watched Dundalk last night, and that was a massive win for them. And Derry getting the draw as well has kind of kept them a little bit in it, but I felt they probably had to win last night to give themselves a real chance. But just because of the scheduling that's going to come up for Shamrock Rovers and the amount of games, and you know as well, Declan, like, we obviously follow all the English football and Ken, and teams go on Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, whatever the case may be. Our teams will struggle with that, because we're just not used to it. We don't have the squad depth. Even though Shamrock Rovers have a really, really brilliant squad, they'll still find it difficult to juggle all the games, and it does give hope to the other teams, and especially Dundalk. They'll feel now as though they're in with a real chance of maybe overtaking them in the league title race.
I think we'll move on to Pats in a minute, but I just wanted to mention Alan Manus, if I could. Outstanding in the home leg against Scuppy in Tallaght Stadium, making the crucial saves to keep the visitors out, and then producing a penalty save at the Brandywell last night as well.
Yeah, I think Alan Manus, to be fair, since he's come in, Declan, their fortunes have turned. Because if you remember back, and people have discussed this now with the success of Stephen Bradley, but there was a time there when the fans wanted him out. And it was around the time of the goalkeeper situation, and they were really struggling. And I think Chashinsky was one of them, and Kevin Horgan, and they really were struggling on the goalkeeper front, and they went out and signed Alaman. It's a top quality goalkeeper. Why it took them so long to sign the top quality goalkeeper always baffled me. And I remember there was a bit of criticism around the time myself and Stephen Bradley had words over it, but they signed a goalkeeper anyway, and their fortunes turned. They went on to win the league, and he's been a mainstay of the team, an experienced goalkeeper, a brilliant goalkeeper, and it's no surprise really to see their fortunes turn since he's come in.
Yeah, let's turn to Pats, as Declan said, and of course, you know, the unsavoury sort of racist abuse as well that the players suffered away to CSK Sofia. It's always very unsavoury when things like this happen in a game of football.
Yeah, definitely, Ken, and their discipline was disgraceful, CSK Sofia, on Thursday night. It really was, but on the football side, it's such an opportunity miss for St. Pat's, because they were poor enough as well, and when you get to this stage of the competition, we're always going to be the underdog in the tie, and you would have felt that you would have come up against maybe stronger opposition than what they faced. But St. Pat's, for large spells, not just the other night, but for the tie itself, were in control of that tie, and they obviously had the away leg win, and then they brought them back to Tala, and they were in control for so much of the game the other night, but they conceded such a sloppy goal from a corner, and then a controversial penalty as well. So they'll be kicking themselves, St. Pat's, because they had a real opportunity getting through that tie.
Yeah, and we have a little clip actually to play. Let's hear what Tim Clancy had to say after the game.
Listen, we're really disappointed. They scored from a corner, set piece, obviously first half. Gar says very good in the air, so we're disappointed with that one. And then a strange decision to give a free kick in front of the dugout. And then looking back at the penalty decision, it hits their player's hand first before it goes onto Harry's hand. So on that side of things, over the two legs with different sets of officials, I feel we certainly weren't getting any of the decisions.
Yeah, I think he's got a fair point there, Alan. They have a difficult league game tomorrow against Sligo Rovers at Richmond Park, a team, of course, coming off a European result during the week as well. Now, after their last games in Europe, neither side did particularly well domestically, being knocked out of the Cup. So, but trying to get back into European competition next season, tomorrow's game is absolutely massive for both of them.
Massive game, and this is the challenge now, Declan, because they've all had a taste of it. Sligo Rovers passed even last year. You think of Bohemians, fantastic run as well. They've earned huge money. But the challenge is that you have to keep getting back into those European positions, especially if you want to challenge like the Shamrock Rovers. And Derry have their own investment. Obviously, what you think of Shamrock Rovers, the money they're going to earn now, on top of what they've been doing over the last 3 or 4 years, it's going to take St. Pat's and Sligo Rovers to be qualifying for Europe year in, year out, just to try and earn that money to bring in better quality players, try and overtake Shamrock Rovers. So it's a huge game tomorrow in Inchicore. I'm heading along to it, and that's the challenge that faces both Pats, Sligo, Bowes, Shelburne, Drogheda. You could even throw into the mix now. It's very, very tight there with 4 or 5 teams trying to get that last qualifying spot for Europe.
Yeah, let's turn our attention to the Premier League, Alan, because it's back already, back with a bang last week. We were talking to Eamon Dunphy earlier about how impressive Haaland were in Manchester City, and Liverpool, okay, dropped points. United, very, very poor against Brighton. But I think it's going to be the usual suspects at the top of the table towards the end of the season. Do you see it any different?
Yeah, back with a bang, all right, Ken. Not, we were in with a bang.
No. Yeah, a bang on the floor for United.
I'm not sure how many more bangs we can be hit with.
Oh, it could be another one this afternoon. That's what I'll tell you. Lots of intrepidation for this afternoon, I know that.
Oh my God, it's so bad. But yeah, I just think with City obviously signing Haaland, it's going to take something special to stop them. Even though Liverpool dropped the points, I still think they'll be challenging Man City, obviously. And I actually tipped them before the game last week, because in the Charity Shield against Man City, they were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And they've obviously brought in Nunes as well. And I still think that they'll go very far and maybe win the league. But with a Haaland on Sunday against West Ham, he's a monster. The amount of goals he's going to score is anybody's guess. You think them playing today against, these are the games where he could chalk up 2 and 3 against the likes of Bournemouth. Because normally in these games, the teams that get promoted, they go to Man City and they could lose 4 or 5. You would think he'll get 2 or 3 if that's the case. So I think Spurs are probably the ones that are the most impressive out of all the challenging teams that could push them a little bit. And again, I go back to it, Ken, and we discussed this many times. Why didn't Man United go for Conte when they had the chance? It amazed me. And I know people argue about, oh well, maybe his style of football or he's a short-term manager. But when you think of the position Man United are in, and you look at Spurs and what he's done with Spurs, Yeah. He was the
in a short space of time as well, you know. But
and he's a fantastic manager. Disciplined. He doesn't take any rubbish. He's weeded out the bad eggs. Spurs already brought in good characters, good fellas.
Yeah. And I love his enthusiasm on the side of the pitch as well. You know, I think that's fantastic.
Absolutely, and that's what it's crying out for in Old Trafford. That's what the fans want to get behind. You know.
Yeah. So, what's your prediction this afternoon?
Brentford 4-0.
Yeah, it is the Golf Correspondent. Good morning, Philip. How are you?
Great to be on, Ken. Thank
you. Yeah. And looking forward to the weekend. Of course, we'll start with our very own Leona Maguire. She's just three off the lead on the LPGA Tour. She's having a great run at the moment. Yeah, a great run last week and now, following her up this week.
Oh, she is. She's the next superstar of Irish golf, Ken, and possibly of world golf as well.
Yeah.
If you look at what she's done in the last sort of 12, 18 months, the Solheim Cup thing, the 5 wins out of 5 as a rookie, that really put her on the map, as it were, in world golf. We knew how good she was, but the Americans didn't. Mm. She's since won on the LPGA Tour. She had a breakthrough win this year. Yeah. And as you say, she had a top 4 finish in the Women's Open at Muirfield last week, very close to getting into the playoff.
Yeah.
And she's carried on that now up the north at Galgorm this week. And she's in a perfect position to win that tournament.
Yeah, she's been really... and it's like anything, isn't it? It can snowball. You just get that little bit of confidence, that little bit of a run going. But it's sustaining as well. That's the hard part.
It is at all top levels of sport. Yeah. It is. But she's improved now. I think she's in the top 16, 17 in the world. Like the upward graph, she hasn't peaked out yet.
No.
But she hasn't got to her max. The next thing for her has to be the challenge for a major next year. Mm. But there's a bit of golf to be seen in her yet, because the Irish Women's Open is on next month down in Dunollan. And Irish fans will get a chance to see her, on our doorstep, as it were.
Yeah.
Because you won't see too much of her on this side of the pond.
No.
Because our main focus is going to be on the PGA Tour in America, where she's a huge hit. And they've got 5 majors in women's golf. They've got one more than the men have. So that gives her 20%. Not good on some, but an extra chance of winning one. And I think she'll get there pretty soon. She's definitely reached her peak. She's in her late 20s. You know, she's getting there, and she's going to be a mainstay of the European Solheim Cup. And I would be astonished, Ken, if she doesn't add her list to the name of Irish golf major winners in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, there you go. You heard it from Philip Quinn here for us. I'm sure a lot of people will be backing her to do that. And, of course, Dromoland Castle, as you said, beautiful golf course as well. I'm sure the fans will turn out in their numbers to see her there as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great to have the Irish Women's Open back, by the way.
Yeah.
We lost it for a year or two, the COVID situation, but there's been some great winners of that over the years, like Laura Davis and Suzanne Pedersen, the Women's Golf European Tour, and we can kind of touch upon the Men's European Tour as well. It's kind of under threat a little bit, it slipped back a little bit from where it was. Mm. So hopefully the Irish Women's Open can play its part in reviving the Women's European Tour, as the Men's Irish Open, is getting back to where it once was as well. And we just need probably a stronger field for that next year. But look, the next big event here after this weekend, hopefully we can see Leona go down the stretch with Georgia Hall tomorrow. That'll be terrific. And kick on from there for the Irish Women's Open next month and sign off what's been an extraordinary year for her.
Yeah, tell me, before we turn our attention to the PGA Tour and Larry and McIlroy, of course, and Power at the St. Jude Invitational, were you at the Adair Pro-Am for JP McManus?
Yeah, I was down there, Ken. I was on the wrong side of the ropes, unlike some people. It was an extraordinary event, and how JP does it is phenomenal. Mm. He had everybody there from World Golf, and World Golf at the moment is being split apart.
Yeah.
We might touch upon that in a moment or two. But he manages to unify everybody. Mm. An extraordinary couple of days. Lovely little gestures. I mean, everybody who walked in got an ice cream cone voucher, which I thought was terrific.
Yeah.
And after it was all over, he had the big sort of celebration dinner for all the stars. And a couple of days later, he did the exact same thing on the exact same stage and setting for all the voluntary staff
who helped
make the week work. So that was a great couple of days. Yeah. And what a joy to see Tiger Woods on Irish turf. That may never happen again.
No.
Just to be at that press conference and to watch him, you could see he's not what he was physically.
Yeah.
But he has immense aura, and his status in the game is there forever. And I think that was the greatest coup of all.
I have to tell you a funny little story. The last time I played in that JP McManus was 2010. I'm on the putting green, and of course there's like hundreds of people on the putting green and around it with caddies and whatnot. And as I was putting into a hole, sharing it with a few other golfers, well, other, I wouldn't say golfers in inverted commas, but yeah. Next round I hear this kerfuffle behind me, and there I see Tiger Woods waiting to get onto the putting green. I was holding him up, so that's
hang
my
on,
claim.
Hang on,
that's my claim to fame. I held Tiger Woods up on the putting green.
Did I hear little Dickie Bird telling me you're heading up to the northwest this week to Rossapenna?
Oh, I am. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that should be good fun.
Some great names up there, Ken. Some great Irish football now. See Mick McCarthy and Paddy Bonner and Steve Stone and Noel Quinn.
Yeah.
Some great names.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm looking forward to that. That's on Tuesday up in the great Rossapenna. I think they've got a few courses. Pat Ruddy course as well is up there. Of course,
Andy
Pat
Hills,
Ruddy
yeah.
from the European club, he's designed a course up there. So, yeah, never played up there, but I'm looking forward to it. That should be good fun, all right, you know.
Yeah,
let's turn our attention to the PGA. Of course, we've got Larry and McIlroy. But Seamus Power didn't have a great round, did he?
No, Power missed out. Hasn't quite been firing, Seamus. You know, he missed a cut in the Open at St Andrews. Didn't quite adjust coming back to Lynx Golf for the PGA Tour. He took 3 weeks off. You know, his target this season has always been the Tour Championship, and he's now slipped out of the top 30. So he missed the cut yesterday. He's got to have a good week next week. Second leg of the playoffs to make the top 30. He's not that far out of it, so he just needs to make the cut. Rory has missed the cut. That's a big blow, but it's Rory's first tournament back after the Open. And again, I think he needed a break. You know, I think he was a little bit, I don't like using the word shell-shocked, but like he probably doesn't know how that one got away from him in many ways. He'll be okay. He'll be back next week and he'll be fine for the top 30. He's a lock for the top 30 for the Tour Championship. And Shane Lowry, he made the cut, you know, and he just needs a good weekend and he'll be okay for the top 30 as well. So we've got Lowry to look forward to the weekend. They're big purses, Ken, $15 million. Next week the same, and then the big one for the Tour Championship at East Lake, where there's an $18 million prize first money. And there's a lot of golf being thrown around, a lot of money being thrown around in golf right now.
Yeah.
And you kind of wonder why, because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is. Well, let's turn our attention to that, because during the week, of course, Taylor Gooch, Hudson Swafford and Matt Jones applied for a temporary restraining order against the PGA, having signed for it LIV Golf, but a federal court judge in San Francisco upheld the PGA Tour's decision to suspend the trio, starting with this week's St. Jude Invitational. And Rory said it made sort of common sense that these three players lost the court battle. It's a lot of controversy over the LIV Golf. I don't like it, to be honest. I don't like what they're doing. What do you think? What do people in the game and the correspondence thing?
Well, it's the talking point, first of all. We're talking about it now. Everybody has a view on it.
Yeah.
So it's here, and you have to sort of look at it. And most people have a view. If you're a golfer in your high 40s and you've done 25 years on tour, and you can't hit the ball three in the jars anymore, and you don't like doing the grind, you know, it's a godsend. You know, you're playing small, shorter tournaments, 54-hole tournaments. You're playing less tournaments. You're playing for more money. So I get that from that point of view.
Yeah.
It is definitely threatening when you see it's threatening the PGA Tour, it's threatening the DP World Tour, it's throwing the majors up in the air as to what's going to happen there, and it's throwing the Ryder Cup into flux as well, because you have a lot of the top younger players are now moving across, and the rumour is, and it's apparently going to be confirmed fairly shortly, that Cam Smith, Open champion, world number two, he signed up, and that's a significant sort of, not say blow, it's a strike for LIV Golf, that's a great one for them to have, and it's slightly weakens the field of the PGA Tour. I mean, if you look at the field this weekend, Ken, you know, there's no doubt that if the likes of Johnson, Koepka, DeChambeau, you know, were there, it would be a bigger attraction for the FedEx Cup. So if you're a sponsor, you want those guys there. They're not there.
Where is it all going, though? That's what I'd like to know. Or where can it end? Like,
well, where it can end is it's going to have to come to a point at some stage, because the guys have gone to LIV, signed up for big, big money. They still want to play the four majors. Yeah. And it's the unique thing about World Golf, Ken, is that the four majors are not aligned to any tour.
Yeah.
They're all separate, independently run tournaments.
Yeah.
The Green Blazers run Augusta National. They decided to get the invite.
Yeah.
The R&A run the Open. The PGA of America run the USPGA. And the US Open is run by the USGA. And they have their own rules.
Mm.
At the moment, the big thing about the LIV Golf guys is, the younger ones in particular, their world rankings are slipping down every week, because they're not playing in tournaments. They're playing, it's a knockout golf, I think, that's what I call it, 54-hole tournaments and shotgun starts. I mean, it's a knockout golf. But if you can't play in the majors in 18 months or 2 years' time, it might refocus minds. But LIV Golf have deep, deep pockets, Ken. There's $2 billion being put in by the Saudis, and there's more to come. So do you know what it needs? And I've said this, I think it needs somebody to sit down and get them all into a room.
Try and work out together.
And work out something. And I mean, you and me, you mentioned JP McManus. I think someone like him or a figure like that. Find knock heads together, come up with a schedule that works for all pre-tours, but crucially preserves the sanctity of the four majors, and that we get to see the best golfers competing in the majors every year. We all want that.
I think that would be the best for everybody. But at the moment, it's not working out. Do you think it will ever come to the stage where the likes of the Masters and the US Open, the USGA, and the PGA will actually ban the players? Do you think it will come to a head there where they'll ban them from the majors? Force their hands slightly?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. The PGA Tour have banned because they're saying, okay, you were a member of our association, you've now left, so we're now banning you, you can't come back in again. You've walked away. So the different setup there. Yeah. The majors, as I said to you, are peculiar animals. They have the criteria for selection. Mm. So if you meet the criteria, then you get in. Yeah. But the key criteria is world ranking. And most of the live guys are slipping down the world ranking. Yeah, now, some of them have exemptions. Like Johnson will always have an exemption for Augusta, which gets the envelope.
Yeah.
We might not get it. Mm. And Kupka still has his majors exemptions. DeChambeau won the US Open a couple of years ago. But the other guys, most of the others, like Garcia's, the Stenson, the Westwoods, Stenson will have the Open exemption. Most of them don't. So I don't think they'll ban them, but I think they'll just let the sort of the criteria for selection play out.
Yeah.
And in 2 or 3 years' time, there'll only be a couple of live golfers who'll be eligible. Yeah. Now, Smith will be eligible for all four majors because he's just won the Open. He gets a 5-year exemption for everything.
Yeah.
So he needn't worry about it. But yeah, on the flip side of the Ken, we said it earlier, you want the big players playing in these tournaments.
Yeah,
so
course, yeah.
There has to be some balance reached, and it's going to need somebody to knock heads together and try and point a way forward, because live are not going away.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, if they don't get the way they want to, they may. You just never know. In a few years' time, you know, you just.
But they may decide to pull up stumps and retire to the pavilion. Yeah, they may just do that.
Yeah.
And then where does that leave the guys?
Where does that leave the guys?
You know,
eventually?
Where does that leave them? So,
I mean, that's the thing about any sport, isn't it, Philip? It's about when you're sort of starting off. Are you starting off to have pots of money in your bank, or are you starting off to win tournaments, and particularly the majors, of what you're going to be? You're creating a legacy for yourself, whereas your legacy is sort of slightly tainted because you've moved over to another side.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. That's why it's heartening, if I'm honest with you, to see the Tiger turn down the money.
Yeah.
His legacy is established. And most of the young guys, we saw Scotty Scheffler this week walked across the Cam Smith press conference. You know, that was interesting.
Yeah.
He was making a point. He's the world number one. You've got McIlroy, Spieth, Thomas, Ram. You know, there's on one side of the fence of the guys who want to win tournaments and won majors. Now they're not waiting for Friday like the rest of us.
Yeah.
But that's heartening. So you're still going to have strong-ish fields, but you're not going to have the best. And but I think if I was a golfer, I'm only a moderate handicapper, but I think at the end of the day, when you look back, it's not about the LSD in the bank. Not all of it. It's about what did you win? What did you take part in?
Yeah.
You know, what's your majors? Like, you have your majors in snooker. Mm. You know, they can't be taken away from you.
Yeah.
So I would be in favour of the tradition, Ken, I'll be honest with you. Mm. And I'm delighted that Rory has taken his stance. And so far, all the Irish guys have held firm.
Yeah.
Except McDowell, and he's got a lot of flack. And I think he's... A part of him possibly may regret where he is, but other part of him knows that he can't compete on the PGA Tour, so he had to look at something somewhere where he could be competitive.
Mm.
But his legacy as US Open champion is probably slightly, I don't like to use the word tainted, because it'll always be on the CV, but, you know, he's feeling the hurt, I know that. Look, some guys don't care. A lot of the guys have gone, you know, and they're taking the money. And at least, you know, most of them are being upright and saying, don't be the grow the game nonsense. I'm sorry, I'm not buying that. They've done it for monetary reasons. And I say, for the older guys in their 40s, I get that.
Yeah.
The younger guys, I don't know what they're up to, because if they can't play in the majors in the next 2 or 3 years' time, and they go down the legal road, and we've already seen the legal road being, you know, has been trodden on, and it's been rebuffed, as you said in your intro there.
Yeah.
There's going to be more legal challenges to come. No guarantee they're going to win them. And if these guys can't play in the majors in a few years' time, well, the whole project just might slow down, might stall, it might even collapse.
GAA here on Dublin's Talking Sport for the next few moments. An extremely busy section it is too. Joining me here in studio is our hurling analyst Sean Lane, who will be looking ahead a little bit later to the continuing Dublin Senior Hurling Championship and other small ball issues around the capital. Good morning, Sean. Welcome back to the show. How is you this morning?
Good morning, Declan. Yeah, good form. Lovely weather outside.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some cracking hurling, no doubt, over the weekend as well. But we're going to start with football and the 2022 go-ahead Dublin Senior Football Championship, which got underway, of course, last Friday night with wins either side of the Liffey for Castle Knockout in Clondalkin. And Ballymun Kickhams at Parnell Park over there, over Lucan Sars and Clontarf respectively. Now, defending champions Kilmacud Crokes, well, they opened their defence with a 113-5 point success over Raheny on Saturday at county headquarters. Aidan Jones netting the goal for Robbie Brennan's charges there in the 12th minute. Temple Oak Sing Street, promoted of course last season, drew with Ballinteer St John's at O'Toole Park, and another all-outside clash between Ballyboden St Dennis and Coola also ended all square, 16 points to 113. For the Dawkey men there. Thomas Davis, well, previously unbeaten this year, went down to another side who enjoyed a good league campaign, Nafina, while Whitehall Columkill got the better of Round Towers Lusk quite convincingly, 220 to 18. That one played out in Garrettstown. The second round of games in the Championship take place over the course of next weekend. To the Senior Ladies Championship now, also, of course, sponsored by Go Ahead, which began last Wednesday. The Queens of the County are Foxrock Cabinteely, who started their quest for an eighth title in a row. They opened with a repeat of last year's county final win over Nafina. On that occasion, there was 3 points between the teams. Last Wednesday, there was the bare minimum, Foxrock winning out 10 points to 9. Elsewhere, Thomas Davis opened with a home win over Clannagale Fountainoy out in the Kiltipper Road, 215 to 11 points. St Sylvester's last year's All-Ireland Intermediate Queens laid down a marker with a 212 to 15 success over Ballyboden St Enda's, while St Bridges were far too strong for Coola, winning that one 314 to 13. And the Ladies' Championship continues next Wednesday night, with games all around the city and the county. Now, we are going to turn our attention to hurling in the company of the great Sean Lane of Ballinteer St John's, whose club, of course, will be in action later on this evening in their club championship. But we're focusing at the moment on the Senior One Championship. But a good place, I suppose, to start, Sean, is with the defending champions Kilmacud Crokes. They have an O'Toole Park clash with St Bridget's from a quarter to four this afternoon. Quite a lot at stake in this one.
Yeah, there is, Declan. Crokes probably just got across the line last year. I mean, in the final, definitely for 50 minutes, Nafina were by far the better team, but Crokes kept at it and got across the line. You know, they have a few lads away still on holidays. They have a young squad. So Johnny McGurk will be in the other corner there today saying to himself, now, you know, there's, you know, one team out of Luke and Vincent's, Bridges and Crokes is going to lose out here. We might just get Crokes at the right time here. So I think Bridges will fire absolutely everything at Crokes here. Crokes are kind of sore really from, you know, having won it last year. They let themselves down in the Leinster Championship, you might remember, against Ballacolla. You remind me every week that I got that you know, wrong as well, but you know, they really felt after that. So Crokes, if they get back into the playoffs, and I believe they will, you know, they'll have outstanding business, I think. But I do believe that Johnny McGurk's young Bridges team will throw the kitchen sink at them today in O'Toole Park, and that should be a belter of a game. Deck.
Should be, certainly. And we're going to switch across to the other side of the river now at Parnell Park from 5:30. Nafina, the team that Kilmacud Crokes robbed, basically, to win the county title last year in many respects, taking on Coola, a club, of course, who know a thing or two about winning county titles and more in their time. This has the makings of another belter, Sean.
There's no doubt about it, Declan, and I actually spoke with Johnny Toomey there a week or two ago. I was at a match over in Shankill, and, like, you know, they've two real stalwarts have retired from them, you know, Paul Shute and Johnny Shane, and so, you know, he admitted himself, like, they have a big squad, they have a young squad coming through, but, you know, they're going to be really hard to play replace. And really, if you look at Coola's first game, they got a bye in the first day out, but their first game they played Plunkett's Declan, and they were really, really under pressure. They conceded 3-16, which is quite a lot. Plunkett, you remember, the first match conceded 8 goals against Ballyboden in the first round of the championship. So Coola didn't impress that day. Now, having said all that, Nafina, you know, they're you know, we said it, they were the best team in the championship bar the last 10 minutes, and but, you know, you have to play till the final whistle. So I think Coola will be, you know, they're not as good as they used to be, but they still have a formidable team. Con O'Callaghan could be back. You know, there was another 2 or 3 weeks left in that injury, so that's a couple of weeks back. So he could be back. I don't know if he featured for the footballers the last day. I see he was listed in the subs against Bowden where they drew. Nafina under Niall O'Callaghan, the biggest job they'll have this year is to concentrate on playing hurling and being able to make sure that this 10-minute spell in last year's county final doesn't affect the way they play through the game. If they allow thoughts like that and these psychological frailties come in, you know, they're just not going to win the championship. We've had many, many examples of teams losing county finals and coming back and winning it the year after. I think it's there for Nafina to win, but they will have to sort out what happened that day. There were some basic errors in the last 10 minutes, but you know what damage has it done psychologically? That'll be the big issue. But again, Declan, another belter. I'm expecting Cooler to come out with all guns blazing. They'll know they played badly the last day against Plunkett's. You'd have to say in the other game Plunkett's will be playing Jews. I mean, the loser, that'll probably be in the relegation. So another belter at stake there. A great opportunity for Niall Callaghan and Nafina to put down a marker. Yeah. He has the Liam Rushes, the Donald Burks, he has AJ Murphy, who got two goals the last day. Do you know, they're on a bit of a roll, and I expect Nafina to tip this one.
One thing we will have, of course, today is the water breaks reintroduced, of course, because of the extreme temperatures that we're experiencing at the moment. Not that anyone is complaining about that, mind you, but it's good to see them back at the discretion, I think, of the referee, and no coaching allowed. Well, good luck with that one, anyway, yeah. for a start. Anyway, listen, two teams who won't have too far to travel this afternoon to Parnell Park at 3:45 are St Vincent's from Marino and Crave Kieran as well. This is a pairing that ignites great memories from clashes of the past. But what's the prognosis for 2022 for these teams, Sean?
Well, Declan, I kind of half gave Vincent a really good chance to... The Vincent's haven't won the championship since 1993, and I gave him a chance last year to certainly progress and get to a final, and unfortunately they didn't come up trumps. The Crave haven't had a good season. They're under Alan McCrabb this year, the former Dublin All-Star, a man that knows a thing or two about hurling. You know, they're beaten in their two games. This is a, you know, if Crave lose this game, Declan, they're in the relegation. There's no other way of saying this. Huge game for Vincent's, because you have Croaks, Bridget's, Vincent's and Lucan. Vincent's have a little bit of the hard work done where the other teams don't. Vincent's have already beaten Lucan and they've drawn with Bridget's. If Vincent's can win today, I'd be absolutely certain that Vincent's will be in the playoffs. So that's a huge motivation and driving force for Vincent's. It's not just a round robin game. There's a place at stake in the knockouts. And for Crave, Crave won the championship. 2006 is the last time they won. It's a long time. They've gone back a long way from then. But having said that, great club, great passion, great spirit, great tradition. Crave will throw the kitchen sink at Vincent's, and it's only either last year or the year before Vincent's were odds on favour to beat Crave Kieran in the very first game, and we know how that turned out. Crave Kieran turned the whole form book upside down. Yeah. So I'm expecting a belter there today as well.
You just mentioned one thing there, it was the last years that Vincent's won the title and Crave won the title, and of course we've seen the power shift back across the Liffey to the south side with Ballyboden, St Enda's doing, what was it, 5 titles in a row, and Cool and Kilmacud, Croke. So it'd be good to see a good strong north side challenge in the hurling
again. But actually I kind of anticipated that this might come up, because the last 15 seasons, Declan, Bowden have won 7 championships, Cool have won 5, and Croaks have won 3. Yeah. And if you really want it to be, UCD won 2004 and 5 in 2001. Whether they qualify as South Dublin team, I'm not too sure.
Well, no, they would qualify.
2006 is the last time it went to the north side.
They would qualify as an inter-county team, I think, to be fair. Now, Dave Billings, of course, the great Dave, was in charge, and God be good to him indeed as well. Before we move on to the inter-county managerial merry-go-round, Sean, which took a twist or two more during the week, let's have a look at the go-ahead Senior Camogie Championship, because of course that gets underway this weekend as well, and some attractive ties to look forward to there for followers of that sport.
Absolutely, and Declan, it's on the back of a fantastic All-Ireland final. I think both of us were tweeting about it during the week. It was a fantastic game between Kilkenny and Cork. Probably not supported the way it should be, 23,000, but great to see young girls with their flags and having their own heroes on O'Duffy Cup Day. It switches to the Senior A Championship, commences the weekend. The Group A games would be Plunkett's versus Vincent's and Lucan versus Jude's. Funny enough, both teams there, Vincent's and Jude's, were in the last two county finals, Jude's winning the two of them, and they're in the same group. So that opens up an opportunity for somebody on the other side in Group B. You have Castleknock at home to Bowden, and you have Nafina at home to Croaks. And one of the teams to watch in this, I've seen this Croaks team, they're a very, very young side. I've seen them playing their own Ballantyre. You know, they're certainly making huge progress in Camogie down in Crokes, and that's great to see as well. That's great for from a Dublin perspective as well, if we get a couple of girls from Crokes onto the inter-county scene as well.
Yeah, of course, fantastic year for the Dublin Camogie team under Adrian O'Sullivan this year. Made tremendous progress in the Glen Dimplex Championship as well, so hopefully the positivity can spread its way down to the club scene. So we wish all the girls every success in that one over the course of the campaign. Just to go back to the hurling briefly, because I do want to get to the managerial thing, and we're running a little bit short on time this morning. Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua versus St Jude's is another championship game taking place. That one at O'Toole Park in Crumlin from 5:30. Big one for Jude's.
Huge for Jude's. Jude's have lost to Nafina, and look, you know, with the new structure, Declan, 10 teams, the bottom two, so fourth and fifth in both sections are in the relegation. You have to say here, Declan, whoever loses this game is going to be in the relegation and could end up playing the fourth place between Crokes, Bridget's, Vincent's and Lucan, the loser to go down. So this is a huge game for both clubs. Plunkett's have made huge progress in hurling over the last couple of years. Jude's have been thereabouts a couple of years back. So Danny Sutcliffe and the boys will certainly have to raise it to get across the line here today. This won't be an easy game for Jude's.
Yeah, really looking forward to a cracking day's hurling across the in O'Toole Park and in the Parnell Park this afternoon. Of course, there's Tier 2 and Tier 3 championship games taking place. Our own clubs are in action. Volunteer St. John's, who have you got today, Sean?
Yeah, we're at home. We had a good win the last day against Skull, so we're actually at home to Naif Fionnbarrah, who had drawn against Skull. So there'll be very little in that, and hopefully we'll get across the line. Yeah. But the two big teams, on, you know, Whitehall on one side, who we lost to the first day out, are top in the group, and on the other side, Foggs, who would be probably everybody's favourites. Carl O'Brien would be delighted to hear that. But they're operating out of Division 1 and have drawn with Ballyboden in the league. So, you know, if they keep going the way they're going, they could certainly get crowned Senior B champions.
And for what it's worth, Crumlin are playing Clontarf this evening as well.
And but they'll be up against that Declan.
In Tier 3, they certainly will. But we'll be there with our blue and white cheering on the boys anyway. But you mentioned Carl O'Brien there. I spoke to him with text during the week, and he's really looking forward to the conclusion of the championship. All right, and had a great day for the Harry Boland Centenary there recently as well out in Temple. Now, Sean, the managerial merry-go-round continues in hurling. Dublin still without a manager, of course. But one man we know now who definitely won't be managing them is Davy Fitzgerald, because he's gone back to Waterford for another spell in charge. What did you make of that appointment, first of all?
Well, I think you said it. You don't go back. I won't say it's a strange appointment. I thought he did very, very well the first time, the three-year spell. He won a Munster Championship down in Turles one night under the lights. They beat Cork and he got to an All-Ireland final through the back door as well, but unfortunately met the Cats in their prime. To go back, look at Davy, to be fair to him, he'll roll up the sleeve. He's a certain style. He'll get probably three quarters of the people against him, and he'll have a quarter of the people for him. But the one thing about Davy is the most important people will be in the quarter that's for him. He will certainly raise and get the best out of players. Let's be clear, I mean, he won a Leinster Championship with Wexford. He won an All-Ireland with Clare. He won silverware with Waterford the last time before. There's no reason that he won't do it again. And remember what he has there. I mean, you know, it's a wonder you didn't throw this back at me this morning. They were my fancy.
That was coming. Yeah, that was coming, Sean.
Fair enough. But that they were my fancy, and Liam Cahill had them flying. Maybe too early, but so the raw material is there. You know, there's some smashing players down there. So look, at I wish him luck. You know, look, it's probably a good appointment.
Just wanted to throw the bait in there to see would you click, and of course you did. Fair play to you. Now, of course, as I said, finally, we still don't have a manager in Dublin. Davy Fitzgerald is gone. One or two other people who might have been connected with it aren't maybe connected with it anymore. What can you tell us about where the search lies at the moment?
Well, my understanding is that the county board under Mick Seaver set up a subcommittee, and from there they've talked to and interviewed a number of people, and two or three people have been shortlisted. So I would safely say that an appointment is imminent. You know, there probably is a small bit of frustration from this perspective. Kilkenny, lose Brian Cody after 23 years. They have a new manager. Cork's manager stands down. They have a new manager. The Waterford scenario, Liam Cahill goes back to Tipperary, who are looking for a new manager. Davy Fitzgerald walks in. They have a new manager. My understanding is Joe Fortune is staying with Westmeath, so they have a manager. So there's a frustration around that. But let's be clear, and from a county board perspective, you know, they took their time in the last four appointments. And Anthony Daly was there 6 years, a damn good appointment. Matty Kenny has been there for 4 years. Ger Cunningham didn't turn out to be a great appointment, but at the same time, when he was signed on, Pat Gilroy was there for a year. So the last four appointments have been very, very good appointments on paper. They've worked out. I've all confidence in McSavers, John Costello and the county board that we will deliver a damn good manager within the next 7 to 10 days.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.